This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Well, hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard. We've got a new face right here next to us, Jeremy Kitchen, our new Capitol correspondent. Started this week. Jeremy, welcome, first of all, and give folks an idea of kind of your background. You've been involved in conservative politics for a while.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Jeremy Kitchen, I've been kind of around the tech-sledge political scene for about a decade, a little bit over a decade or so. Worked, managed several campaigns across the state and worked for different legislators in the state capitol, and so I'm happy to be here and talk about the legislative process.
And you've escaped, as have I, the state capitol.
Right. The Austin bubble. That's
right. Exactly, which probably not a lot of activity going on there right now. We'll talk about that later. But first, looking at a few of the big stories, I think it was impossible to miss. Looks like we've got an old name coming back, and that's, of course, Robert Francis Beto O'Rourke, hinting this week that he might want to run for governor in 2022.
It'll be interesting to see if he actually wants to run for governor or if this is just a way to kind of keep his name in the mix, right? I don't imagine the assumption that he would lose the race if he did, that he would want to be a three-time loser necessarily.
That's right. I mean, obviously, he lost his Senate bid against Ted Cruz in 2018, although came, you know, within just a few points, actually, kind of too close for comfort for some. And then, of course, had his presidential campaign where he swung even farther left, especially on issues like guns, being anti-gun and those sorts of issues. And now, you know, look, he's saying maybe I want to run to be governor of Texas. We'll follow it. We'll see what he ends up saying. But I think it's going to be an issue that a lot of folks are watching. But speaking of the governor, a big event happening on Monday night, this upcoming Monday night, and that is the State of the State address, which Governor Greg Abbott is going to give at 7 p.m. at night. This is unusual. First of all, talk about what is a State of the State address, but also, you know, why is this year so different?
Sure. Viewers might be familiar with the State of the Union, right? Something the president gives. It's normally during prime time, and they call kind of the special, you know, session, if you will, of Congress and the Senate and what have you. It's very similar, or has been in the past, where it's normally like around lunchtime, and they all meet on the House floor because there's more seats there, right? And they bring in the senators, and it's kind of this big deal during a joint session of the legislature. This year is different in that it's going to happen at 7 p.m. and not when the legislature's in session. And so speculation would say it'd probably be either from like his desk or in front of a podium or something. If you want to just him, it sounds like.
It's certainly something very different than we've seen in years past, right? I mean, normally I think a lot of people would not really ever see the full address. Right. Now, if it's, you know, preempting your television, maybe you've got more Texans watching. But, you know, in the State of the State address, it's not just a speech talking about, you know, accomplishments or this and that. The main portion of the speech is talking about emergency priorities for the legislative session. What is an emergency priority is designated by the governor? What does that mean?
It'll be his priorities. I think, you know, that designation is important because it's allowed to kind of preempt the legislative process in a way, right? And so it kind of gets its own special calendar, if you will. And it's, you know, it's the governor's way of kind of putting pressure on certain legislators to deem these are the things I think are important to the state. And sometimes legislators go with that and sometimes they don't, right?
Right. So the normal way of the process is, as the Constitution lays out, is 60 days, for the first 60 days of the 140-day session, they can't actually vote on a bill unless it is designated as an emergency by the governor. So that's why a lot of people look at these priorities. Do we have any indication what those might be? I think in years past, it was a little more obvious.
Yeah, in years past, it's kind of weird, right? Like compared to previous cycles, you would have had, they call them kind of the big three, right? Like you have the governor messaging, whether it be social media, his own press conferences, right? All those sorts of things, talking about what his priorities are. You even have the speaker, presumptive speaker, you have the lieutenant governor do that. And you could make, you know, you could speculate that there's been a little of that, but there's definitely been significantly less than in previous cycles. And I think very generally, you know, most everyone would speculate, especially in the everything that's taken place over the last year, obviously something COVID related, right? You're going to have most people outside of the governor, he has not communicated that, would maybe be something related to law enforcement, right? Or the kind of the riots that we saw take place over the summer, right? Mm-hmm. Around the country, some way to address that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's the only real things that he signaled. He had a press conference, I think it was last week, where he talked about, you know, supporting law enforcement, specifically funding, right, or not defunding police, as we've kind of seen, mm-hmm. and talking about kind of coming up with penalties, if you will, for local governments that choose to go that route. I believe he's also signaled or messaged something related to, you know, liability protections for kind of running parallel to the federal government in a way, liability protections for businesses in relation to COVID, right? Mm-hmm. But to my knowledge, those are really the only two things he's talked about.
Right. Sean, watching right now, comments that he hopes Abbott fully opens Texas and lowers property tax. You know, I don't know that we're going to see Governor Abbott fully open Texas in this address. I could be wrong. But what about property taxes? Has there been any discussion on that? That was one of the emergency items 2 years ago.
Sure.
And this session, it seems to be kind of a lesser issue, at least when you look at what lawmakers are saying.
Sure. I can't say that I've seen the governor necessarily say anything about that. I can tell you that the authors of the property tax bill from last session have indicated via at least social media, right, that they're trying and working to address kind of what's been dubbed as the disaster loophole that occurred, where local governments are taking advantage of the disaster to mm-hmm. raise rates, right? That sort of thing. And maybe address some of the other kind of more nuanced issues that came from, I think it was SB2 last session. But I have not seen the governor opine on that.
Well, we'll see. You talk about, you know, governor's list of emergency priorities. And you note in your article that was posted up at texasscorecard.com that if he's looking for ideas, conservatives, Republicans who elected the governor in 2014 and in 2018, have come up with their own list of priorities.
Right, yeah. I mean, I don't know for sure how long a platform has existed. I would assume since the infancy of the state Republican Party, but there's a platform that folks get together in a convention, they approve, right? And more recently, they actually have a separate committee and a separate list that comes out for legislative priorities, and mm-hmm. It's pretty specific as to what they want, right? And you would think from someone who counts himself as a member of that party, right, that they would, that'd be a good starting spot.
Well, let's see it. It was not only the Republican Party of Texas's legislative priorities, but you also had conservative activists, conservative organizations across the state coming together and putting, I think it was last year, may have been longer than that, 2020 was the longest year on record, I think, but putting together the Lone Star Agenda.
Right. That's right. And I think that the way I kind of frame that is that that's conservative activists, people that see these issues, right? They've seen it coming for a long time. These are issues that they've been pushing for a long time, that they kind of coalesced and created this list and say, these specific things, these conservative items are things that we want to see happen. You call yourself a conservative, right? So let's make sure we legislate accordingly.
All right. Another issue that's going to be facing the legislature is redistricting. We got a little bit of news on that this week. We talk about constitutionally mandated actions of the legislature. You're mainly talking about only a handful of things. Passing a balanced budget, which that process has begun, but also every 10 years doing redistricting. You've got an article up at texasscorecard.com about redistricting. So what is the 30,000 kind of foot view here of what redistricting is and what that process actually looks like with the state legislature?
Sure. Redistricting is the most unsexiest topic to talk about, to be frank, right? But like it is arguably one of the most important things that happened, right? To your point, they have to come to a budget constitutionally. And because it's an every 10-year process, they also have to engage in the redistricting process. Redistricting itself is just, that's them drawing boundaries, right, for several different jurisdictions up and down the ballot. That includes congressional districts, right? That includes their own districts for House and State Senate. And down the line, local jurisdictions and cities will also engage in that process and do things like their city council districts, mm-hmm. right? You'd have State Board of Education districts. You have some districts for the judiciary, right, that are drawn. So it's a huge process and huge undertaking where they, on paper, attempt to be fair, nonpartisan, apolitical, but it's anything but.
Well, it's contentious in a normal year. I mean, we've seen in history where you've had Democrats even flee the state to try to break quorum over some of these redistricting issues. But this session, of course, with the coronavirus kind of changing the way the legislature is operating and affecting a lot of issues, this is one that also is going to be significantly affected, not only because they're not in the Capitol as often, but because looks like that process is going to be delayed.
Right. Oh, it's seemingly that's almost a sure thing, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to happen. I think it was a few days ago, they had basically let everyone know that it was already going to be delayed, but it's going to be delayed even further, obviously leaning, blaming that on COVID, if you will. But it's also kind of coupled with some lawsuits that have taken place over the last 2 years under the previous presidential administration, mm-hmm. right? And it looks like that data, which would normally be required to be delivered by April 1st, won't be delivered until July. The end of July, which potentially means that there's some things that could happen. That could be a special session called by the governor. That could be it's this own separate board that constitutionally gets created mm-hmm. where they handle it instead of legislators.
So there are two essentially tracks. They could either be coming back later this year to do this, or a board could be doing it without input from the legislature.
So my understanding is the board is five people. They're all the statewide electeds, basically, right? It's the governor himself. It's the lieutenant governor, the speaker of the house. Sure. I think the comptroller and the land commissioner, I think, are the five. And, you know, that happens to be all five Republicans. They all happen to be Republican. But, theoretically, they could be the ones writing the districts, creating the districts, right, for the rest of the state, for the next 10 years.
Interesting. Sarah asks, I keep seeing notices about public redistricting hearings. What would the average citizen have to say? Certainly, it certainly is, I think, an issue that is hard for folks to really engage in.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think if history is any guide, right, it's that, to her point, right, what would you say, right? It's like, I'm sure from a purely partisan standpoint, they'd say, I'd want my district to be all Republicans or all mm-hmm. Democrats, right? It doesn't technically, or it's not supposed to technically work that way. The only real boundaries, if you will, is that it has to protect everyone's ability to vote, right? It has to be equitable, mm-hmm. If you will, in its representation as well. There's a little bit more leeway between the congressional districts that are drawn compared to that of like the House and Senate on the state side, just because of how population is kind of strewn across the state, if you will. But mm-hmm. Every hearing is a little bit different. They are, to your point, are having hearings around the state. Region specific is how they've broken it up.
Virtually.
Yeah. This process, by the way, would have normally taken place a little bit differently during the interim, leading up to this session, where they would have had a lot of these hearings ahead of time already. And they would still be having hearings, but it wouldn't be in the same way. Right now, they'd start the process of kind of going through how it is they draw the maps using software that is available to the public, by the way, too, to use. So
that'd be fun to play around with once we get data. Right. Make my own maps, take a look at that.
Right.
Texas is expected, I should also note. I mean, the number of state seats in the state Senate and the state House of Representatives, those are set in stone. But it looks like Texas could get maybe a couple more congressional seats because of people moving here.
Yeah, I think the most recent hearing they had, the state demographer, which is an office that exists, the state demographer had indicated, I think it was a little over 4 million Texans since the last census, if it was, census data was given, which potentially means that's three to four additional congressional seats, I believe, mm-hmm. That could be gained. That affects things like the Electoral College, right? Yep. Presidential politics. It also affects the census data, not necessarily redistricting, but it will affect federal money that comes down that's based on population, right? So there are certain grants, for instance, right? Things that are factored into our state budget could potentially be affected by that.
Big issue. So. As we wait for that census data, we'll see what comes out.
Sure.
Little housekeeping. So if you've been following the legislature, they were out. This is what we've seen so far. So they gaveled in. They did their rules. We talked about some of that a couple weeks ago. Then they were gone for a week. They were here this week, and both chambers met, I think, for a combined 20 minutes.
Right.
And they are now gaveled out until February 9th. Certainly it's not, I should know, it's certainly not normal for them to completely leave for the first month of session. But we were talking about this earlier, to have like kind of an understanding, in a normal year, they're usually not getting that much done anyway.
Sure.
They're usually just doing resolutions or waving to people in the gallery.
Right.
but they have the illusion of activity. Very interesting to see how that process works right now without that. So they'll be back on February 9th. February 9th is when both chambers are reconvening, and we'll see if they have committees in the House by then, and the process really starts to get going. They should have emergency priorities from the governor as well. A couple other housekeeping things. If you want to check out TexasScorecard.com, we've got a new Texas directory. You want to be engaged in the process. You want to contact your lawmakers. This is the place to find the information to do it. We've got all the legislators in the House and the Senate listed there. You can find your legislator. You can find out how to contact them. Look at their ratings on different organizations' ratings of legislators. You can check them all out right there. That's, of course, at our website. And I also want to note this series that we are concluding this week of lobbyist profiles, putting a face to the name of some of these big lobbyists in Texas. Those profiles have been going out about once a day at TexasScorecard.com. So really encourage everybody to check those out. Now, want to say a quick shout out to everybody watching live right now. We got Sean, of course, in Grapevine, Tim watching from the DFW Metroplex, Evelyn from Fort Worth, Tiffany and Steph in Deer Park, all watching. Thank you so much for joining us. If you have any questions after the show, if you're watching this later, please feel free to drop them down there. I'll try to get to some of them later in the day. But for right now, thank you for watching. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.